the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to another Kent Biz Connect radio show. We're normally a bi-weekly show, but Brian, my co-host, Brian Wakeford, we were here last week as well, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. It seems like only 5 minutes ago. And to try and tackle the plethora of bank holidays and wrestle with them at the moment.
Exactly. So
we've had a one-week gap before a three-week gap.
We didn't want to stop people going to the beach next Monday because they felt obliged to tune into Kent Biz Connect. So we've held it a week early, so that's why we're on again today. We've got a couple of fabulous guests in the studio with us today, and what we'd like to do is bring them into the show from the word go so that they can take part in any discussions. Who have we got with us today?
Right, so today we have Linda.
Good afternoon.
Linda Garcia, always. Welcome to the show.
She's not going to say who she is.
Linda Garcia, Luxi Consulting Limited.
Fantastic. And Linda is our productivity expert in Kent, it's fair to say.
The productivity expert.
So we're going to be talking all sorts of things around productivity, and we've got some exciting news as well, which is an interesting case study there. And we've also got...
Good afternoon. You've got me today. Hello.
Fabulous Alison Palmer from the FSB.
I like your pronunciation of my surname.
Oh, is it wrong?
No, it helps, actually, because it's spelt unusually.
Right.
It is a bit Palmer.
How do you pronounce it?
It depends. Palmer? Palmer.
Oh, Palmer. Palmer. Yeah. Okay. Palmer, I would have thought, is a P-A-L-M-E-R.
You're exactly right.
And you're not one of those. You're an R, not an L.
You're a P-A-R-M-A-R.
It's actually an Indian surname. My in-laws are Punjabi.
Oh, are they?
That's why it's not so funny.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, I never knew that about you.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
spilling all the beans already.
Superb.
Or the onion barges.
Now, you're a bit of a dab hand at this because you're regularly on... BBC Radio Kent, aren't you?
Your local little rival.
Yeah.
Reviewing the papers. Yeah, well, I live quite nearby, so that's quite handy. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in fact, you were on last week, I think.
I was on Friday morning.
Yeah. Mm. And what time of day is that normally?
That's a nice 7 a.m. start.
7 a.m. So this is a bit
more... If anyone's nearby, really welcome.
Oh, this is very civilised then, isn't it?
A bit more civilised than that, isn't it?
I'll listen to it in bed.
Yes, fantastic. Good. So welcome to the show, both of you. And I know we're going to get into some really interesting stuff on the show today. We're live from 3 obviously to 4:30. If you would like to engage with the show while we're live on air, and perhaps you've got something that you would like us to talk about, please do tweet us at Kent_biz, and Brian will be looking at the Twitter feed as we go through the show today and picking up on all of that.
We may shout out.
But I think what we'll do, without further ado, is we'll kind of get into the meat of it. The show really is kind of here for businesses in Kent to kind of share networking opportunities that they might be offering the business community, general news, and also possibly promotions that businesses would like to communicate and tell people about. And what we always do is we start off with a kind of a topical news section. So, Brian, I know you've been scouring the papers. The virtual papers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, trying to see what's going on in Kent or is about to happen in Kent that is either of interest or is going to help Kent businesses or both, perhaps. So, there's a couple of bits really that caught my eye this week. And the first bit is kind of for you East Kentians down in your neck of the woods, Martin. So, Sandwich Station.
Oh.
So, famous place, but in 2020, I believe, because you are the golfing expert, the Open is going to be played there, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
So they're getting geared up for that, and there's actually going to be, Sandwich Station is going to enjoy a £4.3 million upgrade already for the Open in 2020, which is in July, I think.
I think one of the attractions... From the RNA, the Royal and Ancients point of view of having the Open at Sandwich is it's so close to London. And with the high-speed train now from King's Cross, obviously people can get down in, I think, about an hour and a half to Sandwich. So it enables the RNA to market the Open to a much wider, a much larger audience than perhaps they might otherwise be able to do. Because, I mean, Linda, I know you're off to St Andrews. You're doing
start of June
for a
Chariots of Fire
Chariots
beach race.
Of Fire run.
I'll be walking.
The problem with having the open at St Andrews and Carnoustie and where else? So there's some really kind of quite way out of the courses. Turnberry's another good example. Mm. Nobody can get there. Mm. It's very hard to get to, and there's very little accommodation. And so having the open at Sandwich, Brian, is a great opportunity to really get some serious numbers through the gate. Not that it's ever poorly attended, but it just takes on a whole different dynamic.
Well, it's a great...
I didn't know anything about golf. Has it come to Kent before?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, they generally have it at Sandwich sort of every 8 to 10 years, you know, purely because of the fact that as a marketing opportunity, it enables them to just kind of draw in a slightly kind of different dynamic in terms of crowd and numbers and everything.
So, it's a great opportunity, really, for Kent and the businesses and the economy.
Absolutely.
Because it brings a lot of money in. Mm. So they're going to be planning for that. That work will actually start in November of this year, going on for 5 months. They're going to be the biggest thing. They want to work on getting people through and to the course quicker and smoother. Mm. They're going to be extending the platforms, which is something I heard you mention earlier, by 80 metres.
Wow.
So in one direction. Mm. And one of the reasons, the main reason, is so they can accommodate 12 car trains to get more people on them, because at the moment they can't. Mm. And if a 12-car train does come into Sandwich Station, what it means is it backs back across the level crossing, which brings a whole area to a standstill. Mm-hmm. So this will eradicate that.
Oh, I see. That's clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a level crossing there. So they want to kind of negate the need to drop the barriers totally by extending the platform the other way.
Because you can imagine how long it will take for that train to come in and come to a halt and all those people to get off.
Yes, yes.
And people to get on again. It's some time.
And it'll be gridlocked.
But now it will be going 80 metres in the other direction,
So
that'll be really, really good. Mm. And the financing was interesting for me as well, because it's £4.3 million planned. I suspect it'll end up slightly more than that. But the R&A themselves are going to be paying £1.5 million. The Department of Transport are going to be paying £1.5 million. KCC are coming up with £1.3 million.
Wow.
And then there's five councils involved, local councils. Mm. So it's Slough, Ashford,
Dover District,
Dover, Thanet, and I can't remember the other one, but whichever one is closest. But they're between all of them, they're coming up with £100,000 between them.
£100,000.
That's what they've been able to find. So so it would appear money is still tight within the council.
We're certainly within the local district councils. Yeah, I'm amazed that it are even contributing at all, to be honest.
But I would say on that note, you know, the Kent Business Portal, that's the kind of project where as long as an SME is registered on the Kent Business Portal, any of that local...
Yes.
Work, groundwork, all that jazz. Mm. If you're on that portal, you will get a chance to bid for that.
Absolutely.
Work. That is a really good point.
It's a good reminder. Don't forget about those kind of local jobs and work locally, because one job for a local council could lead you on to 10 more years of working really locally.
And Alison is talking about the procurement portal that exists for any large tenders, really.
Yeah, I mean, you can collaborate money, as well.
So
SMEs can join forces. And once you're actually registered on the Kent Business Portal, it means you can also get notifications and apply for NHS contract work.
Yes.
So it can be a really good supply.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So let's hope there are some smaller businesses out there that are kind of switched on to this opportunity.
Never know, you might get a free ticket to the golf while you're there, but I don't
fantastic.
Know.
Yes.
But no, that's a really good point. Well done for mentioning that.
What about you, Linda? Are you what opportunities do you see for you and your business with the Sandwich Station extension? How are
that
you going to be involved?
Won't have a major impact on my business, I don't think.
Are you not going to be getting involved?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not all even right. as a spectator.
You can coach all those SMEs who want to get the jobs in sorting out the roads and the station.
But that's really, it's really
I'm sure
exciting.
It'll have a lot of impact on local community. Mm. But me sitting in Ashford, getting out to my clients across the county, don't get me started on public transport. Yeah.
That's really exciting. But I mean, also, you mentioned Sandwich. Sandwich already has a station. There's also a lot of talk around having a station at Manston. And there's a huge kind of public consultation going on around the airport and the future of the airport at Manston at the moment. I spoke to one of the newly elected Conservative councillors just last week at Business Vision Live, funnily enough.
Oh, yeah.
Who I happen to know, who runs a business locally. And they were telling me that, you know, the objective, certainly at that level locally, within Thanet, is still very much to have Manston remain as a working airport. Mm. But regardless of whether that happens or not, there's always been, there's certainly been a lot of talk around having a dedicated station around Manston. So regardless of whether it became a big housing development or stayed as an airport, I think it would certainly warrant having its own station because, you know, the kind of the commutability of towns like Ramsgate and Broadstairs now.
That probably would have made Manston more viable as a sort of a chartered flight airport as well.
I totally agree.
Because driving into East Kent, which is where, you know, I say, don't get me started on public transport, I even find it a pain in the neck just getting from Ashford to places like Broadstairs, yes. Deal and Ramsgate.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It is, absolutely. So that's kind of in the pipeline as well. And as I say, hopefully regardless of what happens in terms of airport or not airport, then that will become a reality too. And I think it's all, as you were saying, Brian, it's all about connecting East Kent better,
yeah.
You know, to kind of to places like London, for example. And the reality is that, you know, whilst we've got that kind of a lack of kind of skilled workplace opportunities in East Kent, and that is still very much the reality, unfortunately, people are going to want to, you know, or going to have to work outside the area. And a lot of people do commute to London and back every day. So that will help because what you'll then do is with that improved infrastructure, you'll also encourage businesses and individuals to look more seriously about locating to East Kent. And on the back of that, the employers will surely follow suit because if they can put a business, you know, on their employees' doorstep, as it were, then surely that's good for everybody, isn't it? Mm. So it's exciting. I mean, all of that is really exciting stuff. So thanks for mentioning that. It's not just about the golf. There's a bigger picture thing
very much so
going on. Yeah. Although the golf is wonderful, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's a matter of opinion, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Now you've got something else you want to tell us about?
Yeah, there is something else that indeed did catch my eye. There's a marketing agency in Tunbridge called Redico. Or Redico, or REDDICO. Anybody ever heard of them?
Not me.
Okay. All right. Well, what they've in 2018, they've had their best ever year, and since the turn of the year, they've smashed their monthly targets every month. How are they doing it? Well, they've been named the best place to work in Kent, and actually ranked ninth in the UK. Highest revenue, smashed profits, all that kind of stuff. Now, they have an interesting take. Employees can take unlimited holiday. So there's no limit. They can take as much holiday as they like. Mm-hmm. They can choose their own hours. They don't have any bosses. There's not a boss in sight. So they have people like department leads or coaches. They're there to give you guidance. They have no authority, basically. Mm. Mm. So it's a fascinating business model that on the face of it is, well, kind of say to the staff, come in when you like, that kind of thing.
Sounds like a recipe for work. Disaster, doesn't it?
Just it does. Yeah. But yet there it is in the figures.
Yeah.
It's clearly working there.
Yeah.
Netflix and Virgin Management also adopt similar. Virgin Management, I think, adopted the unlimited holidays 4 or 5 years ago. Mm. And here we have a local company. There's a minimum of 96% staff satisfaction and retention and stuff like that. And there's all manner of other things. So on one hand, doesn't it sound weird and crazy? Mm. On another hand, the proof of the pudding is right there. So I think we've got a couple of ladies here.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on it?
More qualified than us to talk about it. Alison, well, you said you had was a famous study by someone or other, and they identified three points.
There's a guy called Daniel Pink. I think he's an American sort of productivity business expert guru. And I remember watching his TED talk a couple of years ago, looking at it really about home working and being a lone worker or working on your own, being self-employed. I'm almost self-employed myself, if you like. Mm. I sort of set my own hours and manage my own time. So Daniel Pink is saying, you can get the best out of your staff if you give them three things: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. So actually saying to somebody, I trust you to do this job well. It's, obviously, there's a thorough recruitment process, I would imagine.
Yes.
So you imagine you've got the right person there who you believe they've got all the right skills for your business. They're the right personality type. They're going to fit in with the team. Then let them get on with the job. Mm. And give them that autonomy. Mm. Because then you let them bring that passion with them as well. They will put in more work. Most of us, I should think, have got a really good work ethic. And a lot of SMEs and small businesses work over and above.
So, but you've raised an interesting point, isn't it? Start with that, you know, you have to start with a kind of pretty robust recruitment process, I would imagine, to make sure you've got the right people.
Yes, because you want to do the best.
And be very, very clear with your contracts and your KPIs and all that kind of stuff. Be really, really clear. But I think there was two things that came out of it for me is that in a couple of instances, the only thing they had to tell some of the staff was to take more holidays because some staff just were not. Mm. So they clearly weren't taking advantage. And I think it goes back to, if you've got a target, okay, it's 20-odd years since I've been involved with the PLC and actually working for somebody, but 20, 25 years. But even then, they basically had, I would have a target of kind of, I don't know, 800 grand in a year or something like that. And they basically kind of didn't care what I did or how I did it. So if as long as I exceeded that, and if you wanted to take a week...
they'll trust you to it. What,
exactly. It doesn't really matter, does it?
But let's bring in Linda, because Linda... I know you're chomping at the bit to get involved here, because none of this will work without certain things being in place, I guess.
No, and that is where I think a lot of this article, and I've just been scrolling through it, hence I wasn't very vocal about the sandwich train station. there's a lot of this is terminology. So, for example, they're saying, oh, we have no managers. Nobody has authority. Mm. We have department leads and coaches. Well, in my terminology, in the way that I approach business development and business management, is a manager should be guiding and coaching the employees that they have responsibility for. Responsibility is not authority. Mm-hmm. Responsibility is a pay grade. It's taking on that added, you know, value for the business. So they might not have that authority. So the employees are perceiving that they're free and easy, which is great. Mm-hmm. I would also argue that actually that's how most businesses operate anyway. They just don't put those buzzwords out there, like, yeah, you can take sort of as unlimited holidays. Now, if you read further through the article, Richard Branson is actually quoted as saying, yes, we did say staff can take off whenever they want for as long as they want, but warned not to let their absence in any way damage the business. So there are caveats here, but when, you know, the media are citing, oh yeah, you can take off, you know, take off anytime you like for holidays, they will have the standards, and they will be told exactly what is expected of them. And that is the beauty of how they're running their business. Yes. So that, you know, you've got to all credit to them. If those staff know exactly where they stand, they're given the numbers, they're given the facts and figures as to what is expected of them for the salary that they're probably earning. And if they get that done in 3 days a week and the company's paying for five, then that's the company's problem. They're sort of, you know, there's hidden opportunity there for them to become more profitable.
I think it's fascinating one. I think as well, the language that is used has such it can have such an immediate effect, and it can be the perception of it as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, so the vocabulary.
Would you rather work for somebody who's going to coach you or be bossed around by a manager?
Yes.
You know, so it, already the word coach makes you think, can you grow and develop further?
Yeah, our managers bossing people around. Managers, in my experience, are actually doing as little bossing around as possible because they hate confrontation. And management should be working with people and coaching them to succeed as well as that employee is capable of within their skills and capabilities.
To help them develop as individuals and be the best employees they can.
And that is how I work with organisations, to say, let's get your managers learning and understanding how to get the best out of their employees.
You're right.
Yeah, it is. It's the vocabulary that they're using is turning the whole thing on its head. Which
but then with that as well, they may well be attracting brighter talent or younger or more diverse workforce. And so they're always going to get the best of the recruitment pool because they're positioning themselves really well. So we should all enter those awards to become award-winning, but they're taking it, I think, pushing it the boundaries a little bit further and saying, well, if Virgin can do that, why can't we? Absolutely. Yes. Take those big corporate examples where it works really well and bring it into the SME world, into the small business, and it can absolutely fly there as well.
Go on,
Linda. There's one other point I wanted to make in the same article. There was another woman being interviewed who's actually moved her employees onto a four-day week rather than a five-day week and therefore giving them a three-day weekend.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Again, I was working and consulting to a business in the States, actually, in North Carolina, where they'd been working, and this was in 1991, so this is not new. 28 years ago, I was working in businesses where they recognised that their employees get a much better work-life balance. They were admittedly doing 10 hours for 4 days a week, but then they had a three-day weekend, and it worked beautifully. It also meant, however, that they did have Friday as a bit of slack built in, so if they were getting behind on production, Friday mornings the staff would come in and they were paid overtime basic hours for that, so additional basic hours. But yeah, I've seen it in a lot of different environments over the years. It's just being phrased in different ways.
I think it throws up an interesting point, is that we all touched on there, is are we paying people for their time or are we paying them to get a job done?
The result.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think it's wrong if we're just saying we need you there 9 to 5 at that desk and sitting there and smiling and having your hands on a computer keyboard.
Exactly that.
It absolutely means nothing. There's a thing in
Watching
Italy.
Watching Facebook.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
In Italy. It's called the owl. So if it's like presenteeism, so you just leave your jacket over the back of a chair and it looks like there's a wise owl sitting at a desk. And actually, you're off having a nice two-hour lunch and some linguine down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not actually doing anything anymore.
Well, without getting too much into productivity and what what employees actually do during their working day, because we're going to talk about that in a minute with Linda. It's a really interesting model. Clearly, there's a changing dynamic in the marketplace. People, in terms of time pressures on us as individuals, you know, people that have to go into an office 5 days a week, they've got children, families, you know, how on earth people manage with two working parents to fit all of that in and still be in an office 9 to 5 every day. It's, you know, it's not the most flexible model for people, is it?
Really,
I think as well, it means that the business misses out on a talent pool.
Yes.
So over the last 10 years, I've seen a massive increase in the amount of flexible working that's offered for any parents or someone who's caring. Doesn't have to be a parent, does it? And that means that suddenly you've got access. So FSB's got a report about women in business. If we supported more women in business, it would add £10 billion to the economy. Mm-hmm. But a lot of women who become mothers then suddenly realise, hang on a minute, the cost of childcare, and I know this myself, there was a few years ago, I was paying 68% of my monthly salary was childcare costs. It's absolutely crippling. Mm-hmm. So unless a business offers some flexible working, which we can do so easily with our smartphones nowadays, they're going to miss out on a talent pool and some really great minds to add. Yeah.
But again, flexi working and job sharing, they're not new concepts. You know, I was job sharing when I was age 17.
So is there a kind of...
Is it that they haven't got enough traction then? Are we still talking about it now because they're not the norm?
I don't know. Maybe I think people may be too nervous to even ask about, or, you know, especially, again, it's coming back down to the women in the workforce. They're too nervous to ask for flexibility around bringing up the children and, you know, school time and stuff like that, or even like caring for elderly relatives. It's not just the youngsters that need looking after, is it? We, you know, end up with...
I think people are still too scared to even bring it up with their employees.
You're absolutely
right. There are also environments where it doesn't work. I mean, I was heading up a contact centre for a local international shipping firm, and we had to have people on the phones in 5 different languages covering 24/7 around the clock. And some of the working mums wanted to be able to work from home. You can't have somebody working from home when you've got a constant stream of you know, calls coming in and potentially, you know, baby crying in the background.
But you could offer shift work on that, which working parents could find quite accommodating when hubby gets in, and production lines are another example.
You know, you can't tell people who are on a shift on a production line, do you know what, it's up to you.
No, it doesn't work for everything, but a lot it can be looked at.
So very interesting. But I think you're absolutely right, Linda. And I was having this discussion with a friend of mine who works on the railways a couple of weeks ago. And there is a fear that if you ask for something out of the ordinary like that, then, you know, there's going to be a black mark against your name. And people are genuinely concerned that they might be...
putting themselves on the radar.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's a two-way street. I know a good friend of mine, this was years ago in London, he got a job with Channel 4, and he said to them, because it's a two-way, do you want to actually work for that company as much as they want to hire you?
Yes.
He said, thanks for the job offer. I'd love to do it, but I want to do a four-day working week.
This was a
long time ago, and it was a bloke. He didn't have children at that point. He didn't have anyone to care for. But he wanted that work-life balance and thought, actually,
and
I
they
can
weren't
do
interested
in
discussing it with him.
Yeah, they did. And then he took it all the way through HR, and they negotiated it all. It took a lot of behind-the-scenes work, and he got that contract. I think you have to be bold, and you can do it.
Yeah. Yep.
It's for your good, your mental well-being as much as you
Yes, yes, absolutely. Exactly.
It would have probably been more productive on the 4 days because
absolutely.
He had that three-day weekend, and that was the fundamental basis.
Back to that
basis.
Autonomy and mastery. They've said that he's got the skills for it. Let's let him see if he can do it. I think there might have been a trial period involved in it, but it worked.
Well, I think it's clearly times are changing. The world is changing at an incredible rate of knots. All the whole dynamic is changing. I think it's fair to say it's still weighted in favour of the employer as opposed to the employee in terms of how these things are discussed.
In terms of humans rather than AI.
Yeah, exactly, and that as well. But it's fascinating. I think what we're going to do now, because we're going to come on to talk about this in a lot more detail in terms of, you know, productivity, for example, and what that actually means in businesses. But there's a few events that we'd like to kind of get out there quickly, I think, Brian. And what we'll do is we'll do a quick fire on these.
A really quick run through.
Rather than going through too much detail. So you start with Kent Space, if you can. He's just shuffling across the studio.
Just got from one end of the studio to the other in 1.4 seconds. Is that impressive or what?
And 1.4 metres.
About that, yeah. Work that out. Something to do with velocity, I think.
It's like watching Usain Bolt at work.
Is it? Bag of bolts, more like the Alison, I think. But
come on then, Usain. What's going on?
Okay, so should we start with Kent Space?
Yes, let's do
that. Didn't we? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got Kent Space in Chatham.
Yes.
Which is the wonderful Sue McGowan and Shannon Reynolds will be hosting that.
That's Lordswood.
I'll probably go myself. That's on the Medway unit, which is Revenge Road in Chatham.
Okay, so that's on Wednesday this week, and
Wednesday 22nd, and that will be
5:30
till around 7:30
on the same evening. If you're not in and around Chatham, but you're actually in and around Ashford, there is the After Six networking this Wednesday, which is run in conjunction with the FSB and the brilliant Alison and her team, the Ashford International, Supply My Business, which is us, and also the Kent MS Therapy Centre. And we have a guest speaker this week, and it is the brilliant Linda Garcia, who's with us today.
Waxing lyrically about all things productivity.
Brilliant. So that's 6 p.m. at the Ashford International Hotel this Wednesday.
Okay. And then on Thursday in Dartford, so FSB, there's Alison getting a mention without even doing anything, which
much.
Is good.
Yeah.
So a good friend of Supply My Business and BBN, the wonderful Simon Morgan from the HR department, is hosting a free FSB Connect event at Base Point Dartford.
Which will be cracking. Yeah,
they're quite well attended. There's actually 81 units in that Base Point, so it's like a little mini industrial estate, and all their events are really, really good.
So that's on the evening after about, is it 5:30?
6 o'clock, I think they'll start. That will go through till 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're stuck for something to do in the morning, Terry Botfield Associates, runs a very successful networking group down on Romney Marsh, Alison. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yes, yeah, that's another good
one. The Marsh Network. Mm. And he has a breakfast this Thursday at 7:30 in the morning, and that's at the Ship Inn in Dimchurch. So if you fancy some breakfast networking this Thursday down on the Marsh, that's the place to go.
Or breakfast networking on Wednesday if we're at the other end of the county. So Bromley, Alpington, even Croydon type of area, but Hayes Lane, Bromley FC. Is the home of BBN.
Of course it is.
BBN Bromley. Right. So Paul McCartney will be hosting. I will be there as well.
Got any spaces?
There are 4 or 5 spaces at the moment
so
for that one.
So
you can get into that. So that will be a kind of 6:45 start, BBN Bromley Bromley FC this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And just quickly adding on to that, I was going to mention BBM Maidstone on Friday. But there's no real point because it's absolutely banged Shocker. Out with about 9 or 10 businesses on the waiting list. Right. So, but just to fly the flag for Maidstone okay. and give the county town a mention, really.
Yes.
Good stuff, good stuff. One final one, and that again is Kent Space, this time in Ashford. Next Wednesday, the 29th of May, from 5:30 p.m. again, the brilliant Tracy Westall from Pecunia She's Credit Management.
Wonderful woman.
We'll Excellent. Be talking
Credit about, Control Tracy.
Yeah, about how to improve your cash flow. So that's our hosts, actually, for Kent Biz Connect and Channel Radio here at Kent Space in Ashford. Always well attended. Nibbles as well thrown in, so what's not to like? So that's next Wednesday, the 29th at 5:30 p.m. Right, I think what we're...
Can I just say,
yes.
just I think, because I obviously I'm a development manager for Kent and there's 32 other FSB development managers in the UK. And Kent, might you might forget it being in the thick of it at the moment, but we're such an active county. There is such a lot going on. And if people want to find advice and support and contacts yes. and clients,
there's loads, isn't
you could
yeah.
do breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yes. You could, really every day.
Absolutely. I used to.
It's amazing. Yeah. But some counties day. Just don't have this.
No, so I know.
We're quite lucky.
No, I know.
We are lucky.
And yeah. We're, yeah, I think we're very supportive.
Yeah. Good.
We did quickly mention the Metrobank event at Maidstone, mm-hmm. so that's on Wednesday the 29th.
That's
so,
the same evening, yeah. yeah.
Wednesday of next week, mm-hmm. but yeah, just to clear up any possible confusion mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And to wrap it up on the 31st, is quite a big event. Zoe Cairns mm-hmm. runs the ZC Live at Strood Academy, mm-hmm. and that's an annual event. I went last year, and there was, I don't know how many hundreds of people mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. but that's a kind of 8 o'clock kickoff in the morning,
yep.
runs
Full
through to 4:30.
Yep, Full day, it's... Mm-hmm.
That would be about right, actually. Mm. It's a fantastic networking event, as well as good events, seminars, speakers,
so
and panels going on.
Friday the 31st.
Friday the 31st. Mm-hmm. So it must be half term because it's,
it is, yes.
it's in the school. So yeah. It's quite Absolutely. Interesting, really. Yeah. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that last year. Really good.
Right, what we're going to do now is we're going to play a bit of tunage, which is hopefully going to...
Best bit of the show, I would say.
Absolutely. Link into our guest.
oh, the pen is sliding down. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's dropped, it's sliding down.
So we will leave our listeners to work out the connection with our first guest, and here we go.
Got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. But she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make a devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, 'cause you might just make up my magic spell. Got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me, baby. Yes, you got your spell on me, baby. Turning my heart into stone. I need you so bad, magic woman. I can't leave you alone. Yes, I need you so bad. Darling,
So, welcome back to Kent Biz Connect. And for the eagle-eared, if there is such a thing out there.
Probably tufty-feathered.
Tufty-feathered yeah, eagle-eared. Listeners out there. Has anybody managed to make the link with our first guest on the show? Brian, help them out.
Okay, Black Magic Woman. So, does she perform black magic? Well, do you know what?
Over to you. Let's find out. Yeah, so welcome.
She can perform black magic on your business. Can she? Linda.
Linda Garcia, welcome
to
the show.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm not sure I perform black magic. I like to call it all in the numbers. It's not magic. It's hard work.
Oh, we'll get them to rename the song then, shall we?
Well, I did ask for accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative by the Andrews sisters, but we haven't got it on the database, so we couldn't have that one.
Now, it's fair to say, I think, that you are Kent's only female productivity expert. Is that
Kent's only productivity expert?
Oh, only, not just female. Okay, fantastic.
No, I don't know. Good Lord. So, we'll wait and see what other productivity experts crawl out of the woodwork and put their hand up to being the male one.
But yeah, what we'd like to do today is kind of dispel perhaps some of the, not necessarily the myths, but perhaps the kind of the lack of understanding in terms of what productivity means, because it's not black magic, is it?
In other words, Linda, what do you do?
Right.
Yes, yes.
So tell us, what I mean, in your own words, what do you think productivity actually means, and why is it relevant to so many businesses that perhaps don't understand what it means?
Mm. Well, actually, going back to the Redico example that we mentioned coming out of the news this afternoon, I would be, you know, just get my mouth watering. I'd love to get into that business and see how they're measuring their productivity. Mm. And essentially, it's making sure that the resources that you're paying for, and we'll get onto some facts and figures in a moment, are actually producing or serving to the standard that you need them to achieve to cover the costs of the product or service that they're providing, that you've quoted to your clients, and that you are at least recovering the cost plus more of that resource that you're paying for. Mm-hmm. So without getting into big mathematical formulas, that's about it. It's optimizing the productivity, the performance of the resources that you've got in the business, and making sure that they're working to the standard that your pricing dictates.
Right.
Does that make it a bit easier?
I think it does. So let's kind of take that pricing kind of analogy one step further. So I guess most businesses price on, I mean, obviously businesses sell products, physical products.
Or service.
But a lot of businesses sell services, and they're selling time to do something. So, you know, take a firm of accountants, for example. They will complete your annual set of accounts for you at the end of the year, and they will charge you a fee to do that.
Yep.
And it's based on an understanding, I guess, of how long it's going to take them.
So they're probably
to do
allowing
that job
for a lead auditor who's going to be on site 20 or 30 hours over the 2 or 3 weeks that they might spend on site. Mm-hmm. They'll have the two junior accountants or the AAT qualified probably spending the 40 hours of the week plus, as we all know that they spend hours and hours in the couple of weeks that they've got to get that audit out. Mm-hmm. But if they don't get that audit completed, which is, that's a bit of a bad example, because they can choose to pick as many examples and sort of do the, what do they call it, the random checks within the time that they've got. But if, you know, something goes wrong or the audit isn't going the way it's got to do, then they've got to throw more resources at it, which means, you know, if they're charging the client the £1,500, £2,000.
So a fixed fee.
There's probably a load of accountants out there going, how much?
Yeah.
then you're starting to eat into your margins.
Right. And that applies to most businesses, really, doesn't it? It doesn't matter whether you're an accountant or creative agency, for example. I mean, let's go back to, you know, what we were just talking about. We have a creative agency that's winning all sorts of awards as a kind of a desirable place to work as an employee, etc.
That's why I said I'd be keen to get my hands on the numbers, but they are.
Yeah, but if you don't deliver a website within the number of hours that you've estimated it's going to be delivered in, and that's got a profit margin attached to it and a kind of an income at the end of it, then, you know, who's going to be paying for that?
And I've had that exact example with the client that I'm currently working with, very tuned, very, you know, switched on, knows exactly where the, you know, the business owner knows exactly what he wants to be able to get. And he's one of the more focused business owners that I've worked with. He had been attempting or had been basing his quotations on £75 an hour return for the people that he was having to use in the business on the different parts of building websites, getting them out there. And when we actually got the numbers out of the business from, you know, the previous 12 months history, it showed that actually he was only getting £57 return on what he'd been pricing for 75. Why? Because the people were taking longer than his costings had allowed to get the work out.
But he's still paying those people. He's still paying his business overhead. Exactly. And that money, ultimately, so that overspend is coming out of his profit.
Yeah, his productivity was 25% down on where he thought it was going to be. Very quickly turned it around. And through motivating people, actually, and giving them an indication of, right, we've got this many hours budgeted for this part of the site, that many hours for the graphic design, that much hours for the quality control. And it's just, you know, it's not just the what clients see on the front end. It's like there's so much more that goes into it on the back end, which is where getting your productivity right, you really have to understand what is the work that goes into producing, in that case, a website. In a, you know, in the in an administrative department where so few business owners even think about the cost that it's, you know, taking to get your sales ledger people to be pushing out their invoices. If you need somebody to be pumping out 50 invoices a week and they're only doing 25 or 30, then that is costing them more money. And what generally happens is that business owners start to see things piling up, work's backlogged, employees are complaining, they're getting demotivated, so they'll throw more people at the problem and they'll pay more wages. And then that is actually diluting their productivity, diluting their profitability, and they're not building that into their costs. So therefore, they're not getting the money back through the work that they're selling or the services, especially in those hidden areas like your back office administration, which is seen as overhead.
So when we talk about
to lose profitability and margin.
Yeah. So when we talk about productivity, what we're actually talking about fundamentally is business profitability. And, you know, there's an awful lot of businesses out there, I think, for whom productivity is something that, you know, probably passes straight over their heads because they don't think it's relevant to their business.
They don't understand but what actually, it's doing and how it will be impacting on their profitability.
What you've just demonstrated is it is actually a fundamental, it's fundamental to any business to understand what you're getting in terms of output for a certain input.
And that's what I've noticed over the, I mean, I've been in consulting, business and management consulting since 1991, nearly 30 years. And the word standards has gone completely out the window, which, again, it's interesting to see what are Redico actually telling their, what are the expectations that they're setting their staff and employees. Businesses generally don't now work to standards or they're not measuring it. So they might be saying, yeah, you know, you're supposed to have done that in 4 hours. Obviously, it's much more prevalent and obvious in the manufacturing environment, but manufacturing hasn't been a big part of, you know, British industry for probably 50 years, 30 years, it's all sort of gone to the wall. So businesses are not defining to the employees how long it should take to do a piece of work.
Are we talking time and motion? Is that what would have been
God
called?
God forbid, you said it, time not me. And I don't walk around in a white coat and I don't have a clipboard in my hand.
Time and motion?
But isn't that where all this started in terms of measurability?
Yeah, it doesn't need to be to the nearest second. And I, you know, I work in businesses and I will go out and do a day's observation, I call it, seeing what happens on the shop floor, on the front line, at the desk, you know, out in the van with whoever's, you know, the drivers or whatever, just to understand how long does it take you to do each drop, or how long does it take you to do 50 invoices? I'm not saying they're measuring microseconds, but it's giving everybody an understanding of, well, it shouldn't be taking you that long. Oh, yeah, but this happens and that happens and the other happens and that
goes
wrong.
You've got some,
so where are you monitoring? Sorry, Martin.
Well, you've got some really interesting numbers to illustrate that, haven't you? Because there was a survey conducted. And you've got some, I mean, this is employees putting their hand up and owning up to how much time they don't actually spend working when they're at work. So just tell us what people owned up to on that level.
Yeah, this was a salary.com survey where they surveyed 750 workers, essentially. And 88% of those workers admitted that they easily waste 1 hour a day at least.
Okay.
So now for
Just not working.
Distracted.
Smoking,
they're on Facebook.
Coffee break.
Chatting. Playing solitaire on the computer.
All the distractions that normally
social media.
Come about because they haven't been given an understanding of what is expected of them and by when.
So that's what they've owned up to. So we can assume it's at least double that, can't we?
Well, yeah. From my experiences observing in the field, and I've worked in many different industries, you can normally look at lost time,
right,
that doesn't mean to say that the person is conscientiously not working. They might be working really inefficiently, or they are getting distracted and or rework, having to redo things because they've done it wrong to quality. So all of those things, you can actually, yeah, you could easily say if they're admitting to an hour, then they're probably not working as effectively for at least two and a half hours a day.
But so let's take that as an example. Yeah. So say you're a firm of plumbers and you've got guys in vans out on the road, and you estimate it's going to take 2 days for someone to fit a new bathroom. In other words, it's going to take them 15 hours of work to do that job.
Yeah.
But in reality, you know that 4 hours are going to be wasted. So in reality, it's going to take them 19 hours to do
a... They'll probably end up going to another half day on the Thursday. We've just got to go and finish that one off. So the client's not going to be paying extra for that.
So you've lost half a day of work.
Yeah, which means they're not starting the next job. So over the year, you gradually start to lose the potential that you had for invoicing. You might end up not quoting maybe you know, another 10 or 15 jobs.
So that's just one person on one bathroom.
Yeah. And this is, well, when I start to sort of show employers the facts and figures, and there's another factor as well, which we'll come on to in a minute. But if you've got, you know, one person losing an hour a day or 2 hours a day, that's about 20 to 25% of their cost. Now, in the UK, the average salary is around 28,000 quid, which with on cost is 35,000. That therefore becomes about £7,500-£8,000 per person per year that you're losing money on. So that's your, you know, £80,000 worth of, sorry, yeah, 35, 78, £80,000 worth of profit that you're losing. If you've got 10 people in the business, that starts to really add up.
And if you've said to a business, you've got to increase your prices by that proportionately to offset that downtime.
Yeah, well, then you're starting to lose your competitive edge. Yeah,
most businesses would turn around and say, I can't put my prices up by, you know, X percent.
You're also not solving the problem, are you, Linda? No. If you're just letting that roll on and then you're still not being effective.
Yep.
Then, as you mentioned before, then someone then get another member of staff in.
That, and that's what you see, is people throw... you know, the employer starts to throw people at the problem rather than resolving the problem, which, going back to the methodologies that I help businesses with, is look at the way that people are working, understand what are the problems. Oh, I haven't done my 50 invoices this morning because such and such happened and so went wrong. I didn't have the figures for that. And there were so many line items, the computer system crashed. People generally and companies don't log that type of issue. So they've got no idea what it's costing them. And, you know, very often I'll show them, well, you know, if you've lost 5 or 6 hours this week on that problem, and that represents 80% of the problems that you've suffered this week, let's resolve that one. That frees up another 5 hours for that person to do their job better. We've just saved you, you know, 1/5 of another person coming into your business.
And I think
that
it's
is
not,
productivity.
And you, you talk about people sort of... wasting an hour here or there. It's not necessarily their fault.
No.
And you don't want to be pointing blame, but we've got survey reports out that show actually the leadership skills in lots of SMEs is quite poor because people don't take their time when they're in charge of their own firm. They don't think, oh, crikey, now I've got 10 members of staff. I better increase and improve my own skills in leadership and training and understand what
and
is.
And that is the
so
big
they still continue in the same vein.
Yeah, they've started the business with their passion at the heart of it. Absolutely great. But along the way, you add loads of other
and that goes back to the vocabulary stroke terminology that you were citing, that Redico don't have managers, they don't have leaders, they have department guides and coaches. That to me, they are managing. They are helping people succeed in their role by identifying what could be done better, how could things be done differently, or sometimes it's just listening to the employee who has sat there and said until they're blue in the face, Mr. Employer, my computer keeps crashing, my computer keeps crashing, but nobody listens to them. So in the end, it just becomes embedded as part of the normal working practices rather than being eliminated because we want to continually improve how things are done. And when you've got those continual problems and the employer, sorry, the employee, the poor staff member, the team person is sat there bashing their heads against a brick wall. Well, I've told the company so many times that this is wrong, but nobody listens. So now I've just said, bugger it. I can't be bothered
to keep
telling them.
Then their engagement goes out the window.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does.
They lose their enthusiasm for the job and for the company.
Exactly.
And they're not going to work hard anyway.
They kind of don't
And that's where I say management is important. So 90% of the effort of the programs that I work on with business owners is getting them to understand how to manage or guide or coach or facilitate whatever vocabulary you want to use about your people. You can't leave people to just get on with it. You've got to have dialogue. And that is the management control systems that I refer to is getting mechanisms in to measure how much of a problem did an issue become? What was it costing us? And what do we need to focus our effort on resolving or improving?
But so in the that first instance, it's a very kind of black and white, you know, in numbers terms, this is how much profit your business is losing.
Exactly.
Which is quite startling.
Yeah, one of the conversations we were having before we came on air was the national living wage that came in 2015. Some employers might not even be aware, but before it kicked off in 2015, I think the national minimum wage was $6.90 or $6.93 an hour. Mm. 2015 saw the introduction of the national living wage. It came in at £7.20 an hour, and the plan was for that to creep up to £9 an hour by 2020. We're now sort of at £8.50, I think, or £8.20 just this last April gone. Mm. With your own cost, your national insurance contributions, and we've also got the auto-enrolment pension that is slapping on an extra 3% maximum for the employer contributions, those businesses will see their salary and payroll costs increase by 35% in 5 years. Mm. How are they absorbing that? Or passing on? Are they whacking it on to the cost? Probably not, because you know, inflation isn't rising by 35%, so prices are probably sort of sticking around where they should be. Mm-hmm. So those, and especially the SME market, are having to absorb a 35% increase in their salary, in their payrolls. Mm. That means they've got to get smarter and cleverer about maintaining their margins, which means they've got to make sure that every employee in the business is working to produce the value that they are costing the business in their
and we
salary.
Already
you
know.
You can see why people are put off hiring staff. I know so many really successful independent consultants, small traders, whatever, who will collaborate with other companies, but they don't want to take on staff because the headaches that come with it and their overarching costs are immense.
But if they understood their productivity in the terms that we've just been describing, you know, there wouldn't be that barrier there necessarily.
We could probably find them. I mean, that 35%, if we could find 17.5% or 20% of that in improving the productivity and the people that are working in the business, their existing resources. Yeah. Now, one of the things I don't do is recommend capital investment to improve productivity. Mm. I take whatever the business has at the time that we're working together and make that work better to try and improve.
So don't just throw money at a problem and think, actually, you know, we've rationalise somebody out of a job.
Exactly. We get into the nitty-gritty of what is the problem.
Yeah.
Eliminate what has normally become embedded as normal practice. Mm. Eliminate the negative, accentuate the positive.
Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it, as well, because there's two opposite schools of thought as well. There's the example that Brian gave with the creative agency, which is in theory completely laissez-faire, and you know, you guys get up to whatever you want to do on a day-to-day basis.
In perception, I think.
In perception,
they will be giving their staff, probably, and that's where they were saying, you know, they know where they stand.
Yes. I bet there's loads of motivation. Yes. I mean, we don't know them, we're guessing, but I think it's...
But that's one school of thought. But then you've got the other school of thought that is, and I think there's software companies out there now, and I think Workday is an example. And funnily enough, they sponsor a lot of golfers on the PGA Tour, and you'd have seen all sorts of top flight golfers wearing Workday. Phil Mickelson is an example. He wears a Workday sponsors patch on his golf shirt. And Workday is a software company where every employee is given a smart card. And every day they go into work, their movements are monitored. For every minute of the day they are at work. And it will monitor how much time you spend on the phone, how much time you spend on the computer, how much time you spend walking around the office or, you know, on a cigarette break or whatever it is in the smoking room. And they are kind of, they're taking that productivity kind of measurement down that road. Yep. So where do you stand on that?
That one's a little bit ambiguous because even though an employee could be actively moving around, it doesn't mean to say that they're not being productive. Mm-hmm. Now, I recommend various different softwares. I personally use Hours Tracker, and I'm currently logging myself as down as marketing. So, you know, and I'm not trying to account for a 40-hour week or anything like that. I want to know how much time I'm spending on different parts of my business.
Right.
The web developing agency that I mentioned earlier, they've moved on to Toggle, and all of the employees are getting onto the screen. They will log the time that they've spent on a specific client, which part of the project they're actually working on. Mm. So yes, I believe there necessarily has to be a degree of logging right. what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that is giving the autonomy to the employee and mm-hmm. giving them the opportunity to be monitoring and taking responsibility for themselves,
right.
which any motivated employee would want mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. Then what people do then, or the employers and employees, I suppose, unionized sort of syndrome gets into is, mm-hmm. oh, but then the quality suffers. Mm-hmm. Well, no, because that's why you have department leads and coaches monitoring how well the people are doing the job, and it becomes part of the overall performance monitoring. Mm-hmm. You've got to achieve a certain quality standard mm-hmm. as well as quantity, cost, and right. time standard.
And it doesn't have to be 100%. Let's not make the mistake if you're employed for 37 and a half hours a week, yeah. you do 37 and a half hours a week.
No. But that is where the openness office, and the honesty yes. comes into it, and mm-hmm. that is how good the employer and the employee understand each other. Like, I don't want you to account for 37 hours and 29 minutes. Yeah. I want to know exactly how you spent your time yeah. so that I can cost in the future. Yes. You know, if it's taking us now 6 hours instead of 4 hours mm-hmm. to develop a website for such and such, then mm-hmm. we can then price that yes. correctly yes. so long as we're not paying for yeah. problems in the system, etc., mm-hmm. etc. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, management control systems do require a degree of monitoring, logging and reporting
yes.
of what is actually going on. Otherwise, and everyone's heard me say, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it.
And I guess it's all in the way that's communicated to, yes. to your employees.
How
that's
people
the key.
Talk to each other.
Yes.
You're going to be condescending and talk down to your employees and just yeah. say, pull your socks up, you're being woolly, get on with it.
Yeah.
They're not going to have
a clue. And you don't
want to
ask leading questions like, now, honestly, tell me, how much time a day do you spend on Facebook at
yeah.
work? Because
yeah.
you're not going to get a sensible answer.
No, you want to know, how much time did you spend on that particular client
yes.
job or,
yes.
you know,
yes. There's a I'll get in here, I must, because I love this topic. The time management, not time management, but how do you spend it? There's an American author, Laura Vanderkam,
who's Alison Palmer.
She's written a book called 168 Hours, How Successful People Spend Their Time. Mm. And it starts off with that premise that we've all got 168 hours in the week.
Mm.
How do we choose to spend it? Mm-hmm. So, and one of her yes. comments, observation brings mindfulness. So yes. you can download it for free. You don't need the software or whatever. You can get an Excel spreadsheet, and I carry them around in my bag all the time. And you just put down each hour what you've done for the week. And then you can look back at it, and then you can go, oh, well, I don't need to do that school
exactly.
run because someone else can do it.
Mm. Yeah.
But I do want to spend more on this because yeah. I know it'll help me in my business in that yeah. way. But without knowing exactly what you're doing or your staff yeah. or within yeah. your business,
and you know, when I start,
you can't cut out the deadwood.
When I start working with the business
Good
owner,
point.
Normally in the much, you know, sort of micro businesses, when they've only just started bringing on maybe one or two employees, the first thing I do is work on them.
Mm.
How are you spending your time?
Right.
And invariably, they're doing sort of, well, there's one property developer that I've been working with over the last 18 months. Mm. He came to me, I work 90-hour weeks. I'm not seeing my boys.
Right.
Don't get to see my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started to really analyse that, it was, you know, we had to get a few behaviour changes. Mm. Don't sit on your phone all night on the, you know, the chat groups, answering the builders, answering this, answering that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got managers in place to do that. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, the problem starts at the top. The business owners are meddling too much in the detail.
Yeah.
And without observing that, you can't change
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And the way that we got them to observe that was to start to just write it down. In fact, I do this, you know, there'll be my clients out there saying, you made me do that as well. Yeah, I get everyone to do
it. It's a really
good
thing.
Really taking notice of what you're doing.
It's
and
so
what,
helpful. It's
yeah.
Really,
and
it can be really illuminating.
Define what you
well.
Should not right. be doing.
We need to move on
Sorry.
Now.
But we can't. It's so interesting.
It is fascinating. Linda, tell us, how do people get in touch with you?
I am on the age-old number of 07717221368. You can email me, linda@aluxi.co.uk. You can go on my website, aluxi.co.uk. Aluxi is A-L-L-U-X-I.
And it's Aluxi Consults on the Twitter, I believe, as
Aluxi,
well.
@Aluxi yeah, Consults. Yeah. I'm on LinkedIn.
So all the usual suspects.
Yeah, I actually always offer a completely free, complimentary
Brilliant.
Discovery consultation first because...
I like
need,
that word, because it is a
you
discovery,
need to doubt,
isn't it?
Well, actually, I call it the consultant's couch. You know, anybody thinking about or needing to sort of look inside themselves, have a look at their businesses and recognising they're not making the profits that they want to make, you need to sit down with me and it will probably take us two or 3 hours to really unravel what happens in your business before I can tell you how I could help you.
So if you are a business owner out there and you employ people, doesn't matter how many people you employ, please don't think productivity isn't relevant for your business, because I hope we've demonstrated today that it fundamentally is at the core of how much money you make, basically, at the end of each year. So, yeah, brilliant. Linda, thank you for that.
Thank you.
We're going to play a bit more tunage now. We're going to have a sort of little break with a bit more tunage, which, again, hopefully will be relevant for our next guest on the show.
Or is it?
So here we go.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. In the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping. With folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5. For watch him shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5.
Us live at Kent_biz. Welcome back, everybody. It's 16:05 on this beautifully sunny May Monday, and we've got some fabulous guests with us in the Kent Biz Connect radio studio. We've just been hearing from the wonderful Linda Garcia at Luxeye Consulting all about, you know, why you cannot afford to ignore productivity in your business. And we've just had some tunage that kind of relates to that. But Brian, perhaps you'd like to explain the link to our next guest.
Yes, agreeably, some of the links are more tenuous than others. nevertheless, it does present us with somewhat of a theme. So that was 9 to 5 by the,
famous. I think
we all
neither of us are blonde or big busted.
I think the link was famous.
Martin and I are big busted, but aren't we, little Brian?
No, we're not.
But basically, it was Dolly Parton 9 to 5, and the theme was, you know, lots of office people, office workers working from 9 to 5, which of course not as many people do now, Alison, do they?
No, I don't think they do.
But the well, you don't think they do. You know if they do or not, Alison, because you are the expert. So So you're going to give us lots of stuff Alison about FSB and stuff.
Your official job title is Regional Development Manager for the FSB in the South East. Is
well,
that right?
Well, Kent, you kind of give me a bit of a promotion if I'm covering the whole of the South East.
All right. I
can barely
wonder.
Get across Kent, okay, and so, the whole of the South East. But thanks.
So,
what on earth do I do?
Well, tell us who the FSB are, because... I'm sure there's, I mean, there's thousands, tens of thousands of members out there, thousands in Kent alone, I'm sure. But I think some people perhaps miss the kind of the core thrust of what you're all about as an organisation. So.
And it kind of depends what day of the week you're Googling, because FSB is also a Russian spy agency.
Yes, of course.
So it's not
That's not you then.
It's their intelligence service.
Except on a Tuesday. FSB, Federation of Small Businesses. So the backstory is, it's 45 years old actually this year, and it started off as a campaigning organisation. There was a salesman who lived up north, and he travelled around the UK, and he spoke to so many different people, and he realised that loads of people were getting really clobbered with the national insurance contributions, and he went, this isn't very fair, why don't we do something about it? So he set up the Federation of Self-Employed and Small Businesses, and it's been going ever since.
Right.
So and that it was set up to... because actually they wanted a collective voice to talk to government, because there wasn't one. This was back in 70 whenever it was.
Right.
And so we've been picking up issues ever since then, really. It's a national organisation.
So the government were making sort of back then arbitrary decisions about what national insurance contributions should look like without talking
and
to
increasing it. Business
owners.
Probably without much consultation.
Yeah.
Without thinking about how would it affect the millions of people up and down the country and affect their productivity and affect their bottom line and their cash flow. But there wasn't a collective voice of small and independent self-employed people.
Yeah.
So the big businesses would be able to swan into Westminster.
Say,
we really agree with that kind of tax, but not the other one.
And what was this person's name?
Oh, gosh, probably Norman. I think it was something like Norman.
Norman Whippintop or something.
You've met him.
Yes. His relative.
I can't remember off the top
of
my head.
Was he a small business owner himself?
Yes, That's why it all started, because he suddenly realised there's a great big gap and that there wasn't that collective voice.
Right.
And so that's what we still do. And we've got surveys galore and reports galore where we go to our members, sign up to Big Voice, take part. It really, really helps.
Right.
And then we survey a few thousand people on whatever is a key sort of topic, and we can take that to government, we can take that to the ministers, and we say, if you do this, that'll be a knock-on effect. And a lot of it...
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, that's my phone. Question.
Oh, that's interesting. Was that Siri or something?
Yeah. I'm glad that wasn't us. Oh, Siri. Siri's talking to you.
I just pinged it by accident. So what we can do is take that information to the government ministers of the day, and sometimes it's the positive effects or sometimes it's the negative effects, and a lot of it's actually done kind of behind the scenes. So we might be stopping things from happening. So you don't always hear about it, because it's like, yay, we've managed to make them not do something.
So you can stop us hearing about it, which is often
well,
good.
But so it won't, the legislation won't ever get through.
Yeah.
So our wins sometimes are behind the scenes because we're saying, because we've gathered some evidence. There was one good example where they were going to increase, Philip Hammond was going to increase national insurance contributions for self-employed. And we went, whoa.
Yes,
and this was a surprise
that.
Announcement. It was a couple of years recently.
Yes, it was. I remember.
We went, hang on. 51% of our members are self-employed, and we knew the immediate effect that would have.
Right.
So we were able to literally ring him up after that budget announcement and say, excuse me, we've got some evidence right here that will show that will have a really negative effect. It won't just bring you much more tax at all.
Disastrous, darling.
It will really stranglehold a lot
let's,
of our
I mean, let's put some of this into perspective.
That decision was changed within a week.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember that.
And we were
if not quicker than
that argument,
So is it very much the same to this day then, Alison?
Unfortunately, some of the topics are still kind of resonant and still similar. So
you're still lobbying as much?
Yeah, one that's been going on as long as I've been there is business rates, which gives everybody a headache, not just because they're hard to calculate, because they're really unfair, and it's such an outdated mode of rates. So it affects businesses in the wrong way. It doesn't look at how businesses are operating nowadays. So business rates, infrastructure, you're talking about whether that's trains or internet broadband access or the roads.
Motorways,
because actually all of that can make us more effective and we can have a stronger economy with better infrastructure. So we lobby on that an awful lot. Skills, it's a big one.
Let me put some numbers behind the importance of that kind of collective small business voice, because I think there's about 5.5 million private sector businesses in the UK.
Yeah.
And I think it's over 96% of those employ 10 people or less.
Exactly.
And so in fact,
in Kent,
76% of all private sector businesses in the UK don't employ anybody.
Yes.
It's just the business owner.
It's massive. So, I think Kent SME, so that's a small and medium enterprise, that's government figures set. So you're a small or medium business if you've got less than 250 staff.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you
it's
that.
It's not about
you know.
The turnover. So it's not whether you're making, you can make £10 million, but there might only be three of you. Mm. You're still, you're a micro business.
So the Federation of Small Businesses, so how do we determine a small business?
So it's the number of
to
staff.
To fit into your federation.
Yeah, that's all it is. You
can anything less than 250?
Yeah. Anything less than 250 employees and you're a small and medium-sized enterprise, technically. Yeah.
But as I say, the vast majority are less than 10, and actually the vast majority within that are no employees at all.
Yeah. And that's exactly, and so in Kent, that's an exact replica of the UK. We've got 97.2% of the Kent economy is SMEs. Yeah. There's almost, you can count the big businesses almost in your hands if I could remember.
And it's interesting, something that you've just alluded to, the lack of training. Mm. One of the things that I've been beating my head against the proverbial brick wall about over the last 3 or 4 years is the lack of training in management. People are not trained to manage.
Yeah.
Leadership is slightly different, but management, so supervision, it comes with a set of skills. We don't just mean soft skills, you know, how to negotiate, how to communicate. Mm. And as far as I'm aware, and you might correct me, the government, the last round of funding released £1.7 million worth into the economy for leadership and management training.
£1.7 million?
Yeah. Now,
into the whole of the UK economy? Mm.
That, on average, you know, the management training cost between £1,000 and £1,500. Mm. That will train about 1,200 people. Mm.
So business support is one that we also lobby on. So there's kind of five key areas, really. And we do all of this by listening to our members. We've got about 160,000 members nationwide. Mm. We survey them regularly. I see them. I think I see about 10% of the Kent membership in a year. So I might see about 1,000 of our members over the course of a year. And so I gauge, I listen to those conversations. I keep a good eye on Twitter and LinkedIn and all of that. And at the networking groups,
I'll
I want
vouch
to hear
for that.
Back
she
from
does.
The hosts.
She sees me 1,000 times a year.
Yeah, hi, Linda. So we listen to all of that. We feedback to head office. And then we use our national data as well, and we check to see is that relevant. And then we feed all this information to local authorities, local councils, council leaders, MPs, so that behind the scenes there is somebody representing small businesses. Because otherwise you'd get forgotten about. The number of boards, strategic boards that are around that are meant to have a business focus, and there's no representation in there. So actually we've got more members than ever in Kent who are really actively engaging. So it might be that behind the scenes, somebody is sitting on Kent International Business Board for us, or someone else is sitting on the Better Business for All board. And so they're a bona fide business owner who live in the county and have got an interest in a particular topic, and they volunteer for us. Mm-hmm. And that's one of our points as well. We're a volunteer-led organisation.
I've just done some quick maths on my own calculator.
I'm going to catch a breath.
and that's a staggering number of businesses that are enrolled. 168,000, did you say something like that?
UK-wide, yeah.
Yes, UK-wide. Yeah.
How many in Kent
is that? About 5,000.
Okay.
We've got the same as Northern Ireland.
But that's still...
Brilliant,
I want more staff. They've got a team over there.
But going back to the numbers I was talking about earlier, still only 3%.
Of
over that, you know, that 5,100,000.
True. But bearing in mind, a member of FSB may also be a member of IOD. They might be a member of a trade association. Yep. So businesses, there's no obligation to be a member of.
But my point is, presumably you want to obviously represent as many small businesses as you possibly can.
Oh, sure.
So what kind of benefits do you provide as an organisation for businesses to sign up and become part of this?
Yeah, that's true. So a membership organisation, so you join, and the cost of joining depends on the number of staff you have, which is a bit odd because it could put you off increasing your staff. But anyway,
the big
that's
ones,
something for someone else to decide. So there's over 20 different benefits. So, and our most popular one probably is the legal helpline. Mm-hmm. So any query, you ring up and you can say, but I don't understand this thing, or there's something in my contract, or whatever it might be. So there's free legal help. Mm-hmm. There's loads of
Tax investigation, I think, is something. If you get a VAT investigation, you're covered.
If HMRC ring up and they want to investigate you, that can save you thousands of pounds. And I know a restaurant who's used it recently.
It would do.
An insurance policy?
Yes, but it means that FSB will pick up that whole investigation for you and manage the whole process.
So the cost of your accountant, any extra to your of the time involved.
Sometimes accountants will say, I recommend FSB do it, because an accountant won't want to do all the investigation.
They help you with debt collection as well.
They help you with debt collection.
Free banking?
Business
do you still
banking
offer free business banking?
Yes.
You've also got a fabulous fuel card.
We do. Is that still going on? I don't know. We've got too many of them.
Yeah, you have a fuel card, I think, if you're a diesel user.
Right. And that gives you a monthly report, and you can then submit that.
Well, it gives you cheaper fuel.
Discounts on fuel. Yeah, discounts on fuel. But also it'll give you your monthly sort of taxable, vatable report. So you can just download that and log that with your accountant.
At certain petrol stations. Presumably.
Probably. I mean,
no, I think it's a card, so it kind of works on that basis. So
pay on it, you'll get some discounts.
You do have to go to certain petrol stations.
Is it a chain?
But once you've found out where your most local one is that takes your fuel card, there are savings.
But the legal helpline and the tax investigation insurance. I mean, if you're a micro business, say you don't actually employ anybody, it's just you as a director of the business. I think the membership is about £140 a year, isn't it?
Yep, that sounds right. So, and someone described it to me as it's as if you've got all those departments behind you.
Mm.
So you can download service like contracts of employment or a contract for a particular project you're working on or an event. You can download that and it's all, they're bona fide, they're all checked by our team. We've got about 65 solicitors nationwide who we use. So they will be updating that regularly. So you can download your contract, put your company name on it, and you know it's 100% secure.
Right.
You don't have to pay off the cuff each time for that kind
of
paperwork.
That's really important, isn't it? Because a lot of people do go online to download legal templates, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. That's exactly the point. At least you know if you're downloading from the FSB Resource Centre, it's a bona fide legal document that you can rest assured covers you. So, So in terms of, because there are other membership organisations out there, I mean, you mentioned the IOD.
Yeah.
We have the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce in Kent, for example. I guess, you know, you're not ultimately, you don't view yourselves as competing for members.
No, in some cases we collaborate, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think the businesses choose what's relevant for them. So some people starting out might think, right, I'm going to join all of it to prove I'm professional. Mm. Some people will select somebody that they've come across who recommends one or another, or vice versa. Other people, as I said, will be trade associations, absolutely depending on their business and their background. But I think Kent's got a great options, really, for the business owners. And we sit very much in that small business sector, self-employed and small businesses. And we're for every sector. So we've got fisheries, graphic designers, radio show hosts, productivity, you know, all of that. All of that, and with all of those additional benefits. So, well, the other thing we do, so we're volunteer-led and we're not-for-profit.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's important.
So that does make us quite distinctive in a sense. Yes. So we're not aligned to any particular organisation. We don't have to make X number of millions of pounds or whatever we do.
Yeah.
And it's fed back into the organisation.
Yeah. Mm.
So,
and there's no favouritism either. I mean, you know, when I came to you recently to say, look, I'd like to run a... offer a networking event after six in Ashford in conjunction with Ashford International, and you said brilliant.
Yeah,
love to get involved.
And we've got so much of that on. I was saying to Brian, I've been with FSB 5 years. I've seen such a massive increase in the social media engagement in this kind of activity on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and social media, but also an absolute desire for businesses to get together face to face. They want to see each other. They want to find out what's going on. Yeah. Who might they collaborate with? Who could be a client? What's happening in their local area?
And build proper relationships.
And build really long-lasting.
Business is really based on
And it could be a friendship. Sometimes people come away going, well, I'm not sure if that worked. And then 6 months later or a year later, you realise that they're together and they've set up a whole business and things are going flying along. And it's because they happen to sit next to each other at a business breakfast.
And business is all about conversation.
All the time. You're absolutely right.
Let's talk about Business Vision Live quickly, because we were all at the show last week at the Showground. You
just
are...
Millionaire hours together. There.
Yeah.
I think the FSB are you the headline sponsor
show? We were the event partner.
Event partner. So even more than the headline sponsor.
Well, it just... Because I think we need to be visible, because we have, it's such a massive part, as we said, 97% of the Kent economy is that small and medium enterprise. And that is the sort of pivotal event of the year, isn't it? Did you say it's like Kent's reunion for businesses? Yeah. You've got to be that.
It was just like one big networking event for me last Wednesday. It was great. Yeah.
So from our point of view, FSB needs to be seen there to support that environment. And we did our thank you tour, didn't we?
You did.
Thank you very much for being a member.
Goodie bags.
We'll meet different businesses at that one who won't be able to come to a networking event because of the nature of their business, because of the hours they're working. some businesses just don't need to or want to network in that sort of brunch, breakfast, lunch and dinner fashion. But they will be exhibiting there. So that's when we can see them once a year and say, excellent, how's it going? Glad you remember. Any particular issues? Congratulate them on their success.
But I love the stuff you also do then on a kind of local level. All the kind of networking, after-hours, breakfast-type stuff. I mean, you work with Dame Kelly Holmes at the old fire station in Tunbridge. I think that's her cafe, isn't it?
She used to run Cafe 1809, which is now called The Hub. So now it's event space. She's been a member, yes. So really what we've done in Kent, and this is with Deborah Turner and David Millam, you might know her.
I do.
They're my... sense checkers, they're our Kent area leaders. So they'll say, yeah, Ali, we need more of that or less of that, or we need to see that MP about this. But what we've managed to do as well is really empowering as such, I don't like that word very much, but facilitating businesses like yourself, Martin, who say, well, there's not much over here, or there's a gap here. I really want something. I'm sure businesses would benefit in that area. And that's where with just a little bit of support from us, and lots of yes, please, more of that. This is what we say to people like you, Martin. Then that means we can get an amazing amount of activity for the local businesses, which really benefits them.
And I like
so we've got that across the whole county now. I think there's nearly 20 volunteers like you, Martin, who just say they're happy to host. It's brilliant.
And I love that collaborative approach because you push it your end, we push it our end, and then when the two come together, you know, we end up with a fantastic event, and that's really what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's not us or you. It's kind of both of us working together.
Exactly. Collaboration.
We've got an open arms policy. Yeah. Open doors, open arms.
Open arms, open doors.
Yeah.
Well, we've got 4 minutes left.
Whoa.
So we haven't spoken about the B word, but I want to.
Really?
Yes, I think
Please.
We need to.
Current
what are
funds.
You? What are you kind of? What is Let's the FSB's the... expectation of where this is all going to pan out? Because I mean, I remember it's taking up so much of your time.
Luckily, it's taking up so much of my time. My colleagues at head office, who are the policy geeks, and they're the ones who follow it avidly. One of my colleagues has got a bet on it, and he won on a bet recently that said it's not going to happen in March, and he was absolutely right.
Is it going to happen at all?
Well, but what is your best case scenario? What is your wish list as the FSB? What have your members told you they want to see as a negotiated exit?
We want a good Brexit for business, funnily enough. Well, and the trouble is, that's the changing shape of it and the changing nature of it. I seriously can't go into depth about it because I absolutely leave it to all the policy geeks, it can change so quickly. It can change day to day in terms of who's in position. What I do locally is try and facilitate that that face-to-face time with the MPs. So just this year, we've had a really good roundtable with Greg Clark, Secretary of State for Business and Energy and Industrial Strategy. We've met with quite a few other Kent MPs as well.
Charlie so Tolhurst that and
yes, we
like
see
that.
Her quite regularly, Small Business Minister. So what I try and do is look at what our head office policy officers are saying, what are our membership saying as a whole, and then saying, right, MP, this is how it's exactly happening on the ground, and look this person in the eye and understand it from their point of view. Because businesses are so sick of it, and actually somebody summed it up best, just saying, no, Brexit is politics, we'll get on with business.
Yes.
We need them to get on with it. And actually, it's slowing some businesses down, but quite a few others are getting the heck on with it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it was ignoring regardless it. It's been over 2 years.
We haven't got any choice, I don't think.
No, exactly.
Just get on with it. It is what it is. What will be, will be.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So we're coming up to the European elections on Thursday.
Yes.
So we'll have
is that this week, is it?
Yeah, 23rd.
God, apparently.
So we'll be saying...
I've
so
never
we'll
had
already...
my electoral...
You haven't got your polling card?
No, I haven't had my polling card yet.
I've been them.
Mine.
I'm not wasting any more time.
Have you got yours?
Well,
what's the point?
Yeah.
Gosh. What's the point?
But we'll be saying, okay, so we're here again, unexpectedly perhaps, but we need the next MEPs to think small first. And that was the title of our manifesto for the last European elections. Actually bearing in mind their legislation process and their policies has an effect on the bulk of the economy.
Right.
So
if you are going to vote for someone that's going
to
put your...
Get involved in it. I mean, might as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Brian's
well, at
not
the moment.
Well,
yeah. We are fast running out of time, so we need to find out how people can best get in touch with their local FSB representative, perhaps, or find out more about membership. So, how do?
She's the most
do
easily
that?
Found lady in the county.
Oh my
gosh, aren't you,
that
Alison?
That sounds awful. That sounds slanderous.
In a nice way, darling.
Okay, okay, good. Yeah, really easy. At FSB Kent, mm-hmm. that's our Twitter address.
On the Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have a look around on the website, fsb.org.uk. Mm.
How do I find out who my local FSB rep is? Because you kind of carve it up by areas, don't you?
Yeah, and networking. That's always kind of changing.
Always that networking.
Ask me first and we'll see
right.
who's around.
Yeah. That's best.
Yeah, so there are membership advisors yes. who will come and talk to you directly about what the benefits are and how it would help your business. Or mm-hmm. just have a look online, or you can phone up and join. Mm-hmm. Have a look online, see what the benefits are. Or come and see us. Come and see your fellow business people at right. one of the Brilliant. Networking events.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And also, Linda, you've
thank
been
you.
Absolutely wonderful.
Best show ever.
The time has flown. We are at the end of the show. Brian and I will be back in 3 weeks' time because we are having a skip next week.
Yeah, 3 weeks, 10th of June.
But in the meantime, what we're going to do is play you out with some tunage, and we look forward to speaking to you and hearing from you again soon.
So I'm not going to tell you who the guests are next time. They can wait.
Exactly. Mm. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
On the floor, 'cause I'm knocking you out.
So come on, I get